Hey, welcome back to True Crime Tuesdays. I'm Jess, and on this podcast, I talk about some true crime cases that I'm interested in. I wanted to make something that was a little bit easier going than YouTube. I have been trying to go through some YouTube ideas lately, and I think a podcast feels like I can really just chat with people rather than having to have something that's pre-scripted. So I thought I would give this a shot as well. I'm interested in what people think about these cases. So if you guys send in messages, that would be really helpful so that we can discuss the cases. I think that's one of my favorite parts about having a channel on YouTube is that people will actually respond to these cases. But it's a little bit harder with a podcast because I'm kind of just talking at people instead. So feel free to send in messages and then we can discuss this. Or if you go to my Instagram, you can also direct message me and we can chat there as well. But it's cool if we can create a little community of people that are all chatting together. Maybe I'll be able to add something onto my website so that we can actually chat on there as well. But we'll figure something out along the way. Either way, I want to see if we can have a little bit more of a discussion about these different cases. I think I'm going to start today's case off with something that I talked about on my YouTube channel already, but I felt was extremely topical right now because it does deal with protests. So we're going to talk about the case of Santiago Maldonado. He was born July 25th of 1989. So he was 28 at the time that this happened. And this happened in 2017. So it's not that long ago, almost 3 years ago. Santiago was a craftsman and a tattoo artist. And he lived in what was called 25 de Mayo in Buenos Aires. So Buenos Aires is like the capital area of Argentina. So he lived pretty close to the capital, but Argentina is so big. So it was, I don't know. Buenos Aires is basically the closest that city that everybody knows about. But like if you're looking at a map, it's actually not super close to it. But either way, that's where he lived. But later down the road, he moved to El Bolsón in Río Negro. I always am like tempted to say things very Americanized, and then I realize that I should just say them with my proper accent. So he moved to El Bolsón in Río Negro, which was, it says 70 kilometers, and I believe if I did my calculations right, that's about 45 miles just north of a Mapuche settlement, which was named Cuxamén. And I don't know that I'm saying all of these names right, so forgive me if I'm not, but the Mapuche people were a group of indigenous people in the south central Chile area and southwest Argentina. So he was pretty close to the area that these people lived in. There's a few mixed reportings of whether or not Santiago was a political person. So according to his family, he didn't really believe in politics, but he did support the Aboriginal communities and having them claim their land back from people who took it away from them. Essentially the government had taken it away from them. His brother though said that he classifies him as an anarchist. So I feel like those are two very differing ideas, but you know, sometimes I guess your parents don't really know everything about you. But the protest that he decided to go to took place on July 31st and August 1st of 2017. And it was held at a Mapuche establishment that was built in the territories that were taken over by an Italian clothing company. And basically this Italian clothing company, the owner, the family all lived in Italy, but they took over a huge portion of the forest and just cut everything down. It took all of this land from these people. And so what happened was then these people were not happy with it. It was their land. And so they decided to protest. The protest was actually led by somebody named Facundo Jones Walla. I, again, don't know if I'm saying these names right, but pretty sure that's right. And Facundo was jailed because the protest actually ended up becoming violent. There was a lot of destruction of property. People in the group were, you know, throwing stones at people, things like that. There's fire, everything. It was extremely dangerous and violent. So Facundo was put in jail, and the people in the group were hooded, and they blocked roads with like trees and things like that as well. So it was pretty intimidating, it seems like. You know, you can't really figure out who's who because everybody's wearing these hoods and covering their faces and then lighting things on fire, covering, you know, or blocking roads so that people can't drive. And I mean, that's pretty scary realistically. And it's kind of crazy that all of this was happening because the protest actually only had 8 people, but apparently Santiago was one of them. So the judge told the national police to clear the blockade that the protesters had created, but to use minimal violence. And, you know, these police were armed, but the judge told them to record everything, keep everything on video so that if anything happened, it would be really apparent who did what. So that's exactly what happened. The disbursement was filmed on video, and basically the police just shooed them away. So the protesters actually came back a few hours later on that same day, and they wanted to block the road again. But this time when the police came, the protesters reacted extremely violently because they were already upset that they were shooed away the first time. So they threw stones at them, and yeah, they just were attacking them basically. And it was reported that 2 of the police officers had severe injuries to their faces and had to go to the hospital after that. So the commander sent a group of 30 police, even though there was actually no warrant for this. He basically said he thought that, like, considering the circumstances of what was happening, that it was totally okay to skip this requirement of needing a warrant and just sent out 30 officers, like armed military officers, which I think is insanely crazy. Like, you don't just send out 30 officers for 8 people who don't have weapons. And then these officers are just totally have like covered in weapons. And yeah, but that's what the commander decided to do. The protesters, they saw the police coming, and essentially they just said, like, we got to escape. That's all we can really do. So they tried swimming. There's a river. It's called the Chubut River. And again, I don't know if I'm saying that right, but it's right near where they were protesting. So a lot of the people went to go, like, swim across the river to get away. Some people tried hiding in, like, the little foresty area that was near the river. And unfortunately, Santiago actually couldn't swim. So swimming across the river was not an option for him. So he tried hiding in the forest next to the river. And after that, they couldn't find Santiago. That was the last time he was seen, was at this protest when all this wild stuff was going on with the police. So they opened a case so that they could figure out what happened to Santiago. The Inter-American Commission on Human Rights suggested that they should be investigated as if that this should be investigated as if it was a forced disappearance. This was first starting off as a search and rescue. They just wanted to try to find Santiago and figure out what happened, but it was later rebranded as a forced disappearance because of the fact that the police were so militant, essentially. There's a group called the United Nations Committee on Enforced Disappearances. I had no idea that this existed. It's probably because I'm in the U.S. and the U.S. is not part of the United Nations. But I think it's really cool that they have a whole committee that focuses on these enforced disappearances so that the government can't just, like, hide people away. But just for the sake of being compact, I'm just going to call these people, or this committee, I should say, the CED, because I keep getting tongue-tied whenever I try to say their name. So it's easier for me to just say CED, but they are the Committee on Enforced Disappearances. So this committee actually asked to oversee the whole investigation. They wanted to make sure that there was no foul play going on. And basically they said that they would do all of the investigating and that they'd keep all of the parties that needed to know what was going on. They'd keep them all informed. So after the CED got involved in this investigation, a group of 20 Mapuche people also came to the court on September 20th and asked to remove the judge that was on the case initially. His name was Judge Otranto, I think is how it's said. And so Judge Otranto was accused of not being an impartial judge, and they actually did end up removing him from the case, but not because of the reason that the Mapuche people wanted him removed. It was nothing to do with intellectual honesty or respect or anything of the case, but it was actually because he did an interview with a newspaper and he discussed some theories of what was happening with Santiago, but this was before the case was closed. So it's really, like, it wasn't okay that he was doing this. He was still in charge of the case as a whole, like the roadblock and all of that, but he wasn't in charge of the Santiago portion of this case. But it just wasn't okay to tell people, like, you have to keep these cases secret, because if you tell too many people about what's going on in the case, then there's no way to know if somebody actually knows information because they were part of the crime or if it's because they heard it on the news. So that's why it was such a problem that he had spoken. So there was a new judge on the case and his name was Judge Yidal. So on August 7th of 2017, this is just about a week after Santiago disappeared, the CED requested that Argentina adopt better search strategies, including taking into consideration what the Mapuche people were saying since they were present during the disappearance of Santiago. Essentially, the CED was calling Argentina as a country out because it had been a week and they still weren't able to find this body of this person. Again, Santiago couldn't swim, so it was kind of mind-blowing that they thought that he would just, like, be gone. And there were, the area that this river was in and that the protest was in was covered in people that would hang out in the area. The Mapuche people would hang out in that area. And they had no reason for Santiago to want to go missing. If anything, the government would want him to go missing because he was protesting the government and the, like, you know, big money in Argentina. So it made no sense why the Mapuche people wouldn't speak up if they saw him. So regardless, the CED got frustrated with Argentina, said that they need to implement better search strategies. And they also requested that the police don't participate in the search or investigation and that the Argentine government protect all the evidence that could lead to the solution. And the Ministry of Security offered a reward to anyone with any information on anything regarding the case, even if they weren't present. So the reason they did this was because they wanted to prevent any kind of, like, hiding within this, like, quote unquote brotherhood that we see often with police forces, where a lot of times police forces, they kind of band together and they don't talk to they talk to each other and they don't tell each other secrets. But this can be really dangerous because, you know, we want to make sure that we're solving these crimes. And if it's police that are committing these crimes, we need to know. So they set a reward for anybody that had any information in case there was any gossip of what was going on with Santiago, but nobody came forward about anything. So that didn't help. And this case went on for quite a while, which makes me really frustrated and sad. But on August 23rd of 2017, the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights also requested that Argentina took all of the measures to locate Santiago. So it really seemed like everybody was just not happy with the way that Argentina was kind of trying to cover up this case. Realistically, I feel like if these agencies or, you know, committees that are outside sources didn't get involved, Argentina would have just been like, sorry, he drowned. But, you know, these, at least these you know, commissions, agencies, committees, whatever, these big organizations that are not from Argentina solely were speaking up and realizing that there was a real problem here, which is why it was initially considered a forced disappearance. So a little while after, even after that, October 6th of 2017, the UN, the CED, published a document saying that they were concerned with Argentina's progress, because at this point it had been, what, like, man, August? Wait, when did he go missing? August, September, October. It had been 2 months. And they still hadn't found him. So yeah, the CED published a document saying that they were concerned with the progress. They said that Argentina was dismissing the police as the perpetration when they shouldn't, and that they forced a disappearance, essentially. They were calling it out like they thought it was happening. They also accused the government of not taking the Mapuche people seriously and treating them as a threat to the national security when they should be offering them protection and considering someone fighting for the community went missing. So, I mean, really, the police were always against the Mapuche people and the Mapuche people were against the police. They were constantly fighting. And so, of course, there was no way ever that these two groups of people would band together to find this missing protester. So, of course, the police force were against this entire search. So there's no question why this would happen, of course. But I'm still really glad that the CED was just calling Argentina out, because I think it put a lot of pressure on the police force and it forced them to actually do something finally. Just a little while after the CED published this document on October 17th, there was a new discovery and it revealed a corpse in the river. So no other deaths or missing people had been in the area, and they did confirm that it was a male in light blue clothes that was found around 300 meters away from the protests that were happening. So everyone pretty much figured that it had to be Santiago. Of course, they can't say that it's him until they officially do, you know, autopsies and things like that. But they, I mean, come on. They knew. The government said that the plants is what made it hard to find the body. But I don't know. I still don't really believe that personally. These are my opinions right now. But I think that if there's this big group of indigenous people that are consistently hanging out in this area and that are on the lookout for this person that was supportive of their community, that this person wouldn't just go missing in these plants that they had searched several times. And it took them over 2 months to find this person as well. So it seems a little suspicious, but that's just my thought on it. So on October 21st, there was a 12-hour autopsy, and there were actually 52 people that were a part of this autopsy, and it showed that there were no signs of violence at all on the body and that the cause of death was drowning, which would make sense because Santiago did, again, not know how to swim. And so if he was like trying to escape and then drowned, then that's possible. It doesn't really make full sense to me why he would drown but be on land, like in these plants, but it's, I guess, possible that like his lungs filled with water and then he was trying to escape. So I'm not entirely sure there, but that's sort of what the autopsy said. And then again on November 24th, so a little more than a month after, 55 more experts did another autopsy and again confirmed that there were no signs of violence and that it was a death by drowning. During this time, they had already found the body, but when Santiago was killed or drowned or hurt himself or was hurt by someone else, again, we don't really know when it happened and how exactly it happened and why it happened was still all under investigation. So by December of 2017, the prosecutor asked to change the case from forced disappearance to suspicious death because they couldn't conclude anything on the forced disappearance front. My sort of hypothesis about this is that maybe there's different types of funding based off of what the case is classified under, but I'm not entirely sure how that works in different countries, especially in Argentina. And then again, in May of 2018, the same request was made again by the Ministry of Security. But both times that this was requested, Judge Yeral, which again was the new judge on this case, declined it. He said basically that everything that they found they said that they found the body, and if they are finding all of these things, it doesn't really matter what the case is classified under, because no matter what, they're still going to investigate this entire case and try to get to the bottom of it. And once the case is solved, we'll know what the case should be classified under. So if the case is solved and it turns out it is a forced disappearance, you keep it as that. If the case is solved and it turns out it was a suspicious death, then you put it under that. And so he didn't see a point in switching this over. Again, I don't really know fully why they wanted to switch it. It's probably because of some sort of funding thing, but I can't confirm that. His family still thinks that it was a forced disappearance. They think that, I don't know that I believe this part. They think that the body was cryopreserved, so basically frozen, and then, you know, taken away and then put back and planted in a certain spot, and at the quote unquote crime scene, and then later found. There's no evidence of this. There's no evidence of any kind of foul play. There's only evidence of drowning on Santiago's body. And I don't know that the government would go to the extent of freezing and then thawing a body of one of eight protesters. It just seems a little outrageous to me, but I mean, it's possible, but I just don't think that that's what happened. But that's what the family believes. They also wanted another autopsy done that was actually done privately, but the judge rejected that as well and said that it would go against what was essentially stated in the closing segments of the case, and that they had already done a couple of autopsies and they didn't need to do another one. I don't know. I find this kind of interesting. I feel like in the United States, once you find the body of a loved one, you're kind of allowed to do whatever you want with it. You can decide how it's buried, if it's cremated, whether or not, you know, if it's already been buried, then if they need to do additional testing, they'll decide whether or not they should do that. And it seems like in Argentina, they were not allowed to make these decisions, and that basically the judge had to make all these decisions rather than the family. So I find that kind of interesting. It's very different. Okay, so I'm going to go over the theories of what could have happened to Santiago and basically what people think happened to him. So the first one is, of course, the forced disappearance theory. So we'll go with that one first, just because it's something that we've sort of been talking about this entire time. According to some witnesses, after the police had an encounter with the eight people that were protesting, agents from the security force carried someone to their truck. And it was later seen that this is actually not at all true. The people that had put this theory out there admitted that they were lying. And they actually are facing charges now because they were, you know, lying about this and could have really hurt the reputation of some people. But that was one of it. One of the theories. But just in case, and I actually really think that they did a good job at this part, but just in case, they did a bunch of DNA sampling of the trucks. And so eight of the samples were actually used in this testing. 14 were not used. I don't know why they didn't sample all of them. My guess is that they were doing it like one by one or something like that. And after eight of them, they decided that it was fine. But either way, all eight of those DNA samples didn't match Santiago's DNA. So the judge ended up dismissing the possibility of this. He also dismissed the possibility of the trucks being washed. I'm not really sure why they dismissed this idea, but they did dismiss that as well. There was also a WhatsApp audio file that was taken that said, quote, Maldonado was on the truck, unquote, but it turned out that this was actually just a joke amongst the police. I think that that's a terrible joke to make, especially since you're being investigated for actually putting somebody on your truck. But apparently this was just a joke. And again, just in case this was actually serious, all 70 of the cell phones from the police, so they took any cell phones of any police officers that were nearby and that had this audio message on it, they were all taken and investigated, and it was found that none of them actually led to any clues of disappearance of Santiago, and that all of these cases, all of these WhatsApp messages were all just gross jokes, but none of them were serious. So again, the judge ruled out the idea of a forced disappearance. Someone from El Bolson did call Santiago's cell phone on August 2nd, so the day after he went missing, and the call was actually answered, and it lasted for 22 seconds, and they heard footsteps. So nobody said hi, nobody said anything, there was no background noise except for the footsteps, and the person who had called found another person that was an engineer from the communication security lab of the National Technological University, and basically asked this person to figure out what was going on with this audio recording, or with the location that the cell phone was in. And so they investigated it together, and the person found out where the phone was picked up, like where the person answered the phone call, but the judge wasn't taking that into consideration. And realistically speaking, I think this could have been an amazing lead. I think that this should have been investigated a little further, but it sounds like there was so much hearsay in this case that the judge was sort of over it and so just decided to move forward. It is also possible, so another theory is that Santiago had a wound of some kind. So it's possible that during this dispersement of like people fleeing from the police when the police were coming the second time around for that second protest, that he got a wound and died later. And that maybe the Mapuches could have buried his body and then dug it back up and put it somewhere so that they could blame the police, because, you know, again, they always are against the government and the police in these cases. And so that's a possibility. That being said, the whole like wound thing, I'm not really entirely sure of, just because the autopsies don't show any of that. Maybe they found him drowning or, you know, already drowned, and so then they took his body, but a wound doesn't seem likely to me. Again, because there were so many people, so many experts on these autopsy cases, you'd think that like the first time it was 52, the second time it was 55, that out of all of those people, somebody would have said something if there really was a case of like foul play here. So I don't think that that's the case. There is another theory that Santiago is hiding. So there was a search and rescue on August 16th, and it was suggested that Santiago was in the Mapuche territory in the last 24 hours. And that was because of the bloodhounds that they had. Santiago's family says that he's pretty quiet, so it's kind of weird for him to protest. And the government also says that it's possible that he was just never there. It's also just kind of hard because everybody was hooded and like, you know, faces covered essentially. So it was a little hard to tell who's who. But some of the Mapuche people say that they actually talked to him on August 1st in the morning, but they weren't acknowledging anything else. So they weren't talking about, you know, seeing him at the protest or anything like that. So who knows, maybe he's hiding, maybe he was never there. It's a little weird. Nobody's really fully 100% sure. There's another theory that Santiago was murdered. So the last time that Santiago used his cell phone was on July 21st of 2017. That same day, 4 to 5 members or so of that same resistance attacked a small house of a worker for the family that owns that big Italian clothing company that we mentioned at the beginning of the episode. So this worker said that he did stab somebody to defend himself, and he had a knife with him. He ended up stabbing somebody. But there was nobody treated nearby, and not much activity from Santiago prior to the August 1st protest. So between like that July 21st date to August 1st, there was not much movement from Santiago in terms of like people hearing from him and seeing him. So people are maybe thinking that he was stabbed by this person and then he bled out and died before the protest even happened. People don't fully believe this theory. The man who was attacked and who was defending himself said that he did have the knife with him, but that he, like, you know, was trying to stab at the people attacking him, but that he didn't kill anybody and that he didn't really hurt anybody that deeply. And the family also refuses to believe this theory because there are videos of him at the protest on July 31st. And also testimonials of a lot of people who had heard from him. The family had talked to him on July 25th, which was his birthday, and on July 27th. So I'm not really sure where they got the July 21st date as the last date that he used his cell phone. But according to the family, they talked to him after that, unless he talked to them on someone else's phone. But if they did, they would know their son's voice. So I'm not sure about that entirely. And the last thing that's against this theory is that there's no DNA that's actually showing that Santiago was at this person's house at all. So realistically speaking, we still don't actually know what happened to Santiago. I'm not sure which theory I believe the most. I just want to believe that maybe he really did just get hurt while he, you know, maybe tried to swim away after this protest, and that there was no foul play in terms of like people dragging him to their car or anything like that. But you just never know, especially with these, you know, big rich families and these big protests and people getting caught up in the craziest things. So I'm just not sure which theory I believe in, but at least the sort of good news, I suppose, is that Santiago's body was found. And at least we do know a couple of things, like, for example, that he did die of drowning. So, and that, again, there was no foul play. So that does, like, you know, take out a lot of the theories, considering that's what over 100 experts have seen in the autopsies. Again, I just feel like this case is extremely topical. I think with so many protests going on, it can be really scary. I know tons of us, and I have seen so many videos of peaceful protests where police come in and seem to just like not really care. I've also seen, you know, the opposite side where people are trying to protest, but then they take it too far. And I think that we need to find a good happy medium. I think that everybody has a right to speak up for themselves, but we just need to make sure that we're staying safe and staying smart. So just be careful out there, please. And hopefully we can have more of these true crime episodes. I'm not sure what I'll be talking about next week quite yet, but we'll come up with something for sure. If you have any suggestions of what kinds of cases you want to hear about, definitely let me know. You can message me on Anchor, or you can send me a message on Instagram. Maybe somewhere I'll put an email address so that you can message me there as well and send me some ideas if you guys are interested in specifics. Otherwise, you can also check out my YouTube channel. It's just Jessica Capo, and I will talk to you guys on Tuesday. Bye.